space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive. And a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wizard old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North
California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
That we're at a turning point in history, a complete revolution in human affairs, with the discovery of totally new energy sources. Many people are skeptical of this, but I think we may be going through the four stages involved in any revolutionary development. One, it's nonsense, don't waste my time. Two, oh, it's interesting but not important. Three, I always said it was a good idea. And four, I thought of it first.
Can you imagine what it would be like if you could split water and run it into your engines? You could put water in your fuel tank to fly airplanes, power stations,
Ordinarily, we look at water to drink and wash our clothes. And today, you have to look at water as a fantastic new fuel source.
A world powered by water might seem like a dream, a pure fantasy. But 100 years ago, that is exactly what the men of steam would have thought about a world powered by oil.
Back in the mid-1980s, I was working on a system putting in some controls when a boiler feed line like this began to have a water hammer, a vibrational problem. And I noticed the pipe changed temperature. And I thought, well, what would happen if we could harness this energy in a non-combustible source? That led to the invention of the hydrosonic pump. Turned out to be my first invention. I'd never invented anything before.
Jim Grigg's first invention was to bring him into direct confrontation with the world of science.
Well, the first year or so, it was kind of just a project that was piddled with, kind of like a hobby on the weekends in spare time with friends. And that was the first time that we noticed the excess energy. It was back in the late 1980s. And I knew that you couldn't get more energy out than you put in. It violated the laws of physics. So I just set the pump to the side for a few months and just left it alone, didn't mess with it, trying to figure out where I was making my mistake.
Jim Grigg's is bang in the middle of the American tradition that has spawned such men as the Wright brothers and Edison, inquisitive, good with machines, working away in their garages and back sheds to turn an idea into a device that works. In Grigg's case, the mistake in the calculations that he was so concerned about has not gone away. In fact, it seems to have turned into a major scientific heresy. The machine appears to produce more energy than it consumes, and Grigg's is now convinced that that is no mistake. He has struggled for 4 years to turn his spare time enthusiasm into a serious business. What he has tried to do is to capture the intriguing effect he'd noticed in that vibrating boiler pipe and use it to create a totally new water heater, one that works without any heat source. His company now produces what amounts to a well-engineered water hammer. It thumps and smashes the water fed into it and raises the temperature to boiling point or to steam in a matter of seconds to replace household or industrial boilers. Now, they happen to call these machines pumps.
What we have is a hydrosonic pump that has a rotor located inside. It's a cylinder that has holes bored in it at specific angles and depths, ranging from a few hundred holes up to a few thousand, depending on whether we're going to make hot water or steam.
The key to the machine seems to be the number and the design of the holes in the rotor. Grigg's has experimented with many different combinations to get the best results. The rotor fits tightly into a steel chamber with only a very small gap between the two. Water is fed into the gap, and the rotor is spun rapidly by a small electric motor. As it spins, the water is pummeled and hammered through the holes. In seconds, it flows out of the cylinder as hot water or steam. What's so extraordinary about such an ordinary-looking machine is the claim that it is more than 100% efficient. More energy has been measured coming out in the form of heat or steam than the electrical energy needed to turn the rotor. The term for this is overunity. Scientifically, this is supposed to be impossible because it overturns the fundamental law of conservation of energy. It says you cannot get something for nothing. And yet, external observers claim to have measured here up to 70% more energy out than in.
What continues to bother me is something every day you get up and you look to say, well, maybe today I'll find where I made my mistake in my calculations and this will be explained. Or a scientist will come up with a theory that will fit what we're doing and explain it.
Tom Grogi has had a distinguished career at one of the leading scientific centers in America, Fermilab. He also has a nationwide reputation as an investigator into the unusual. He's far too experienced to worry about the impact on his career of working on the fringes of science. When news about Jim Grigg's invention began to spread, Grogi was contacted hundreds of miles away in his home city of Chicago.
I came to Georgia out of an internet group just happened to put up a note that says, why don't we send Tom Drovey to Georgia to investigate this device? What I said to the group is that I can't go and prove that it's right or wrong. What I can do is go and look and see if the way he approaches the problem makes sense to me and if he's doing all the right kinds of things.
Tom Drovey was on his way to meet Jim Griggs and his business partner, Kelly Hudson.
I believe that most of the scientific community is just closed-minded about this, and they'll always be looking, or not always, hopefully not always, but are basically looking for anything to discredit or disprove what we're doing. And, you know, you're going up against some pretty smart people that are saying that.
Well, I really don't expect to find anything positive here. None of these devices have panned out in the past, so I really don't expect this one to.
Hi, I'm Tom Drovey.
Jim Griggs. Tom.
Hi, Jim.
Good to meet you. What kind of efficiencies are you seeing out of this on like hot water run?
The normal hot water run efficiencies run anywhere from around 108% efficient up to about 115% efficient.
I was shown that it was putting out, I don't know, 8 or 10% more energy than it was put in. But these are just numbers on a computer, and what you're looking for is something that's convincing. Now, what I did do is try to look at the experimental technique and ask very specific questions about how they made measurements.
Then we have generally six J-type thermocouples that feed back to the data acquisition system.
And then you've got a thermometer here just to check that the thermocouples are reading correctly.
The company has invested probably in excess of $50,000 over the last year and a half, to buy instrumentation and take the time to perform some of these measurements.
They've invested a fair amount of money and effort, and it was actually a good enough to design to take the measurements they needed to take. What was missing was sophistication in the analysis of the measurements that they were taking.
True. Yeah.
Tom's comments to us were that we were not a scientific laboratory, that we did not keep consistent log books, things that would be just acceptable, you know, a nice acceptable laboratory procedure in the scientific community. But our answer to that has been, we're the first ones to tell you we are not scientists. That is not our job.
One either plays the inventor game or you play the science game. If you're playing the inventor game, then you keep everything completely secret and you just sell your excess energy. If you're playing the science game, then there are specific rules that are in effect. And the key part of the science game is replication. There were not even the most fundamental scientific processes applied to the way of making the measurements and the way to analyze them. And so I don't think there's any particular reason to believe them as true.
Most inventions don't start in a university or a big city. They start in someone's garage or in someone's brain as an idea. The fact that we started out in a little town in Powder Springs, Georgia, and then grew into a bigger plant in the thriving metropolis of Rome, Georgia, no, it's not surprising to me.
The visit was inconclusive. Tom Drovey found no proof of over-unity, but nor could he disprove it. Griggs has installed 9 machines so far, and in each case, it's caused some surprise. 250 miles away, for example, a Griggs machine has been heating the water for Albany Fire Station for over a year.
Right after our initial installation, we measured the output with Jim's team, representatives from a local university, one of our local power companies, and we were all astounded with that.
Aw, crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Mad Science Show at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you have access to not one, but three separate chat rooms. And for some reason, that doggone computer's moving a bit slow. Anyway, Stephen Gibbons posted a nifty link inside the chat room about how to make conductive Play-Doh. And while I was looking at this, pretty neat. I think you could actually take it a little step farther and make Play-Doh batteries, you know. You got a non-conductive Play-Doh and two conductive Play-Dohs, and you could mix a couple different chemistries and maybe a little metal of two different types of metals in there and actually build a battery out of Play-Doh. It's a pretty good idea. I'd have to give that a shot. Anyway, if I can get this doggone thing to refresh here, get back over there. Well, I'll just go to this computer then. Dead burn it. Alright, so I posted some links in there. By the way, we've got Raymond in here today, and we got Jermaine. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hola. I like Muddy always says.
Hi, guys.
Yeah, okay, so anyway, what the heck was that all about? Never mind. Anyway, I also posted a few video links in there. First one was a pretty funny one for CNN, where the founder of the Weather Channel is telling the CNN guy that global warming was a fraud. So I thought that was pretty good, so I threw that in there. Anyway, the next one down there in line was a man that built a little gizmo to create a vortex inside a jar of water using magnets and an electric motor underneath it with magnets connected to that. And it's pretty neat, some of the things and the power that he gets going on there. So I want to talk about that because it has a lot of potential as far as hydraulic force and stuff like that. And the next two videos down there, one is a video for cavitation of water. Essentially, they're basically making an intentional water hammer using a pump-type system that has a drum that has holes drilled into it so that it spins the water and slams it against the side and actually produces heat. And the second one down there is one that where they're using a magnetic disc to spin past copper wire using the lens effect to actually heat the copper up and produce water or eddy currents, whichever one of them. I can't remember. It don't matter. You're heating water with copper and magnets. Pretty neat. So, you guys got any ideas on that? Wake up!
I heard Justin made a boiler for his church at work on the, that works on the same principle. It's a big disc with magnets inside.
Yeah.
It's in front of a copper boiler or copper chamber.
He said he'd been using that for quite some time.
Yeah.
I got to...
It works good, apparently, yeah.
As far as the cavitation of water, it's causing it to heat up. It can be 5 degrees Fahrenheit outside, way below the freezing of water, but yet a river is still running. Water doesn't freeze because it's running and because it's cavitating and it's creating its own heat, its own friction. And I also mentioned a couple times about how I did an experiment. I took 1 pound of water, which is up one pint, and put it in at 42 degrees, put it in a blender, turned the blender on puree, ran it for 20 minutes, the water heated up to 50 degrees Fahrenheit, that's 50 BTUs in 20 minutes, just off the cavitation of the water in the blender. Now, here's the thing, I didn't have the container of the steel insulator, and I had no heat in that room, and it was like 38 to 42 degrees outside. So actually, it should have heated up a lot hotter and a lot faster. insulated the container. So cavitation of water to heat it, yes, absolutely 100% true.
Well, they've been farmers have been using a gizmo in their ponds for quite some years, basically just like a wind turbine that spins a little paddle around and keeps the water continuously circulating in the pond so that the pond don't dry up.
Exactly. Don't
dry up, freeze up.
And hundreds of them out here in Texas. Out in West Texas. Using them all the time. It's not new technology at all. Nothing to do about it. They've been doing it for 100 years.
Well,
nobody's ever actually done it to the point of heating the water up hot enough to take a bath. But, I mean, except now with the water hammer, it is true. I mean, there is no fake or void or nothing there.
It's real. In the podcast we played there, you heard they was talking about they had been running all the hot water at a fire station for a year using that doggone process of cavitation, a sonic water pump?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, that process... along with a few other things like about spinning the magnets across copper tubing and using... Is it eddy currents or the lens effect or both? Doggone it, can't remember.
Both.
Yeah.
Both.
All right, so anyway, that's another method by which you can actually heat water. I'm pushing buttons over here.
Water doesn't affect magnets, right? And when a magnet passes over copper, it does create an eddy current. And why does an electric motor or a generator burn up? Because it's creating more heat than the insulation on the water can handle. So if you put the water underwater, and then you run the eddy currents across it, it would heat the water up.
Yeah, well, they're actually circulating the water through the copper tubing.
Yeah. Well, why do that? Why not push a coil underwater? Heck, a 16th of an inch of water covered it. That'll take the heat off the copper wire, so you can generate heat and produce hot water and electricity at the same time.
All right, well, anyway, the point I'm trying to get to by using these two different deals right there and some old technology. See, they used to burn coal in order to heat water into steam so that they can run steam engines.
Right.
So what would stop a person from actually using these two processes to do the same thing, just using an electric motor to spin a magnetic flywheel across the some copper tubing while at the same time using the cavitation effect to speed up the heating via the pump system? So basically you'd have a two for one kind of deal right there. You'd have the magnet spin across the copper, and at the same time the rotor that would be magnetic rotor, you'd have a cavitation rotor that would be spinning the water inside a drum that would be creating a lot of heat, and so you're getting two types of heat out of the same motion of that electric motor. And so in this video they said that they were getting out more, as much as 70% more energy than they were putting in, which, you know, of course, if you talk to scientists and the laws of physics and all that, they'll want to argue with that until they're blue in the face. I couldn't care less. The fact of the matter is, if you can spin an electric motor and produce steam by using the water hammer effect and cavitation to spin that water so rapidly that it's getting superheated into steam, well, now you got pressure built up. And so with that pressure built up, you could use that pressure for not only heating purposes, but you could use the pressure for turning turbines, which in turn could you know, theoretically run a doggone generator head that could turn around and put the juice back to the doggone electric motor. Does that sound like it's possible?
Yes, it does.
Well, Stan Myers was running around in the 70s driving a dune buggy that was running off of water, hydrogen technology. And, of course, to this very day, nobody's ever been able to really seriously replicate everything that he did because he was kind of trying to keep it under his hat so he could make a little bit of money off of it. Of course, we see how that went. He got pretty much ripped off, and his ideas are still out there, and some of his devices are still out there. But we all know how you know, the electrolysis process does for separating hydrogen and oxygen from water, but it draws a lot of amperage because of the way that they do it. Now, if you're using either sound or radio waves, basically like the equivalents of how a microwave oven boils water, it don't take long at all to boil water in a microwave. I mean, it's like, I think, 2 minutes. Depending on how powerful your microwave is, it'll get water boiling into steam. And so, basically using radio technology, you can boil water into steam, or you can separate the hydrogen and oxygen molecules from each other, and you can run it on hydrogen, you know, oxygen and hydrogen. But with this other deal right here, you know, a lot of people saying, well, you can't run your car on water, and they give you all these different reasons why you can't run your car on water. That's because, first off, the internal combustion engine is not designed to run on water. It's not specifically designed to run on water, even though throughout the history of time, farmers have been injecting water into their tractors to save on fuel. Even in the airplane industry, they used to use, they probably still do, water injections for a real strong boost or whatever to, you know, maybe kick an engine back over in case of a stall or something like that. There's all kinds of different purposes.
It isn't necessarily that you need to change the engine. You just need to change the carburetor.
Yeah. Change the fuel delivery system is the biggest one.
During the last part of the Second World War, they used to use water injection in the aircraft fighter planes because the Japanese planes were much faster than our planes. So if they got on your tail, you couldn't shake them. So they would go into a power dive, inject water directly into the cylinder, and boost their power by 50%.
See?
The Japanese, the only thing is they put it in too much water. And if they ran it for more than 8 to 10 seconds, it would blow holes in the pistons that you could drop a nickel through.
Yeah, well, that's so, because it had a lot of power. The hydrogen technology.
Now, the thing is, when I heard about this back in the middle to late 70s, the first time I ever heard about it, I did exactly that, but I didn't put that as much water as they did. They had a stream of water almost 3/16 of a quarter of an inch diameter, just boiling it right into the cylinder itself. What I did is I took a mixture off of one of my wife's empty perfume bottles. It just so happened that the stem fit perfectly inside the windshield washer hose. So I drilled a hole in my air breather cap with the air filter and mounted that right directly over the carburetor. Well, now I put distilled water in the windshield washer container, and I had a way to inject the water simply by flipping on the windshield washer. And I'm going to tell you something right now. You talk about power, 45 miles an hour, push your foot to the floor, hit that switch, and you couldn't pull your head off the back glass of that pickup truck.
Cool.
I mean, at 45 miles an hour, it was squall rubber for 100 yards.
Is it as powerful as that jet engine you got in the background?
Oh, man. Hush.
Anyway, here's the cool thing here. If you took that water cavitation and you took the magnetic water heater technology and added a few other technologies together, you could literally build an electric steam engine that would essentially start off spinning a magnetic rotor and a rotor that had the holes drilled in it for the water hammer effect. And you could heat water rapidly. And throwing in a little bit of induction heating at the same time. So now you got three ways that you can heat up the doggone water really fast. And if you want to get even more, you could actually throw in some microwave technology to heat that water up even faster. So the more stuff that you're slamming to that water, the hotter that water is going to get. And so if you started off from start to finish, and that's also why I wanted to go back into that one that had the vortex where the guy was spinning the magnets inside the water and you get a look like a tornado inside there. You could build an engine that had a transmission that used hydraulics, centrifugal force, and the water spinning inside the transmission and magnets that were, when you spin your electric motor up, those magnets are creating a vortex inside the transmission, and that will give you the torque to actually, you know, go down the road. But the water spinning inside the engine itself would produce steam that would then in turn turn either turbines or pistons. You see where I'm going here?
Yeah, but do you think that the induction, because of induction you heat a copper with your magnet flywheel, do you think that's more efficient than the heat elements for water?
Well, yeah, I think that would be way more efficient
because
than
those.
Because
if you have magnets spinning in front of a conductor, it generates a lot of magnetic friction.
Yeah.
And so
that's what actually produces the heat inside the copper tubing. But with
but it is friction, so you need to know if it is more efficient than your heater element that uses straight the electricity.
So I guess the best way to find that out would be to get a heater element, build the one with the copper and the magnetic flywheel, and also build the one with the water hammer, the drum, the pump system. Run them all at the same time and watch the battery load on each one of them to see which one is the least efficient. And use the least efficient only for a backup. And so, like, let's say you got in your wheels, you actually have some generators built into your wheels. And so the faster you go, then the more power that it'll put to this system. And actually throwing in some plasma technology like I'm working on, making a plasma water heater, you wouldn't have that drag that you're talking about, like on the magnetic flywheel. You see what I'm saying? You're just going to use the high voltage direct, the high frequency of that energy to energize gas into the plasma state, which in turn will transfer that heat through copper tubing in through the water circulation system. So there's so many different ways that you could use even the ones that had the least amount of efficiency to either supplement, to bring more heat up to it. You could get this thing to produce some extremely hot water. So imagine an engine and a transmission that was specifically designed to use all these effects, between water cavitation to water vortexes, basically building up centrifugal force that you could use to turn, just like an automatic transmission. You know how the automatic transmission, the torque converter works, right?
Yeah, fluid.
Yeah, you get that fluid spinning up, and when it gets to a certain speed, then it'll start engaging the clutches on there.
Right.
Well,
it'll creep up the sides.
Yeah. If done properly, though, you wouldn't even have to have any clutches in there. You could use turbines in there. Those turbines will only overcome the force if the centrifugal force gets higher. You see what I mean? So the faster you get that water spinning, the water weighs I don't know. We keep getting different measurements. Somewhere close to 7 to 10 pounds for a gallon of water. So imagine
it's just barely under 8 pounds.
Yeah.
So or just rounds it off to 8 pounds. It's 7.75 or 8 or something like that.
Okay, 8 pounds. We'll go with that. But imagine 8 pounds at 1,500 RPMs.
Whoa! How about 8 pounds of water at say 6,000 RPMs?
Well, there you go.
Why increase the speed of your engine? Why not use gears? There is a chart for combustion engines, or engines in general, that they have a certain speed that they work more efficient on. And if you increase the speed, yes, you increase your if you increase your RPM, you do increase your speed, but your efficiency goes down. So you need to use gears, like you said, use automatic transmission. Do not use the RPMs of the engine to control the speed of your vehicle.
No, just use the torque of it. But it depending on what type of impellers you use inside the transmission to spin the fluid up, you can literally get some. I don't know if you ever look at jet ski technology and the way that it works, or even vacuum sweeper technology, the way that they spin that air inside there. There are some impellers out there that get the maximum amount of force to the RPMs that you're actually putting in from the electric motor. And so,
right, because they're built to work, to do a specific task on that specific RPM they got.
Yeah, so you'll get literally the equivalence of a tornado in a can, you know. And so using those effects, if you started off from start to finish and began to design an engine and a transmission for an automobile, or even a generator for that matter, it doesn't matter which direction you want to go with it, but nonetheless, you could specifically engineer an engine to use all the forces of water. Water being heated, water being spun up, and all that. You know, you could use the hydraulic pressure that would be produced by that water spinning, because that energy, that force has got to go somewhere. And if you have a lot of force inside, let's say you got your transmission, and you got a lot of force of spinning water in there, and that energy's wanting to go somewhere, it don't have nowhere to go. And then you channel it off through a gear set that will allow pressure to go one direction only, like a positive displacement pump. You could literally use it for a hydraulic pump. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because the liquid can't be compressed, so that's how they use hydraulics, is they force it through, you know, a gear type of pump. And the liquid can't go back the other way, so it pressurizes the chamber and it's trying to find its way out. So all the technology to engineer a motor or an engine that will run on water, specifically either using it via steam or separating the hydrogen and oxygen or using hydraulic pressure, combination of all these things wrapped up into one piece of machinery, you'd be able to prove once and for all that you could run a car literally off of water technology. What do you think?
Well, it has been done, so of course it will work.
But I'm talking about not just being done, but I'm talking about super efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what you were speaking about earlier about the gear ratio. We know enough about gear ratios to where we can literally get a 5-horse Briggs & Stratton engine to turn a 7-speed transaxle that will pull a riding lawnmower and a rider straight up a doggone hill. You know, 5 horsepower don't seem like a lot. But, you know, when you talk about a lot of torque, you get one of them ride lawnmowers, normally, you know, like this old style clutch go-karts that they got. You know, you can't get that thing to go up a hill because it just don't got enough torque. It's just running off the clutch and the shaft.
Everything you say is backed up 100% by the laws of physics and the laws of thermodynamics. It is absolutely 100% possible to run a vehicle off of water.
Yeah.
I mean, think about this a minute. They used to run steam locomotives all across the United States. That's water.
Yeah, they
now, think about the diesel engine. The real diesel engines don't have blow plugs. They just create enough pressure to where all the heat is condensed to where it's hot enough that the diesel fuel automatically ignites. Now, so why couldn't you do the same thing with water, but put glow plugs in it? Instead of fuel, use water and throw a mist of water in that super hot piston. And all of a sudden on the downstroke, on the downstroke, you're releasing the pressure so that it automatically turns into steam, creating a greater pressure. What you're saying is 100% backed up by all the laws of physics and the laws of thermodynamics. So it absolutely will work. Now all you got to do is somebody build that kind of thing.
Yeah. I built a electric go-kart. It was in my first video, Electron 2. It's funny because I crashed it in the video. Yeah. But that thing was using a 7-speed transaxle out of a rod and lawnmower, and the electric motor that I was using on that wasn't very substantial, but it was still able to, even though it moved slowly, it was still able to pull big hills. And so there's a proof of what torque can do for you. But as far as using old steam technology, when they were burning coal or wood or whatever they burned, even, you know, getting farther when they started burning actual diesel fuels and stuff like that to produce steam, you always had to have that massive amount of fuel on there. But nowadays, there are solar panel technologies out there that you can literally run electric motors directly off the sun. That's without no batteries or whatsoever. You know, just regular solar power. There's some pretty efficient solar panels out there. That, like the ones that you brought over, Raymond, you said those were like, what, 200 watts a piece? Yeah? Man, that radio silence is killing me. You got to turn your mic on when you want to talk.
I think you could hear me through your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was saying, yes, you're right. They average between 200-250 watts each. Originally, they were 450 watt panels.
Okay.
But they were damaged, but they still work.
So imagine you got a 450 watt panel, and all you needed to do was run an electric motor off of that. And the electric motor, its only purpose was to spin a pumping system that would create a water hammer and produce superheated steam. And that's all you had to do. So when the sun was out, you'd be running it directly off the sun, but in the other time, you could run a small amount of battery banks because you wouldn't need a whole lot, you know, just to buy you some time until the sun comes back out again. And you actually use some of that steam to, run turbines to run, smaller generating systems. So properly engineered, I mean, you could take this technology to the extreme and you could have an engine that would be an electric steam engine. The equivalence of an electric steam engine. They got little toys that they've had around since way back in the early 1900s. There might be some prior to that, but they got toys, little steam engines that you can go on eBay and buy if you can get one. Yeah, if you can get one without getting outbidded by some other turkey that wants it more than you.
Think about this a minute. What about the railroad industry? They take these diesel electric engines, and that's all they are. The diesel does not turn the drive the engine. The diesel just turns the generator. Well, what about if they're hauling 150, 200 coal cars down the railroad track, and every one of these coal cars, the sides of them, are nothing more than solar panels?
Yeah.
They won't need the diesel motor then, except at night.
Even if they did need the diesel motors, they would be so much more efficient because the majority of the energy necessary would be pulled off the sun on the side of those coal cars. So at the very least, they'd be using less fuel to get from point A to point B.
Here's another plus on that idea. The diesel engines turn a generator and to make DC electricity. Also, that was automatically made DC. They use DC motors.
Yeah. So, basically, using all these systems to supplement each other. See, I talk about building an engine that would run on pure distilled water, and it's using all the technologies available out there. Well, this particular idea would be kind of using a little bit of technology from old style, you know, steam engines, as opposed to the way that I'm talking about running to perfectly engineer an engine that would run on pure distilled water. It's fully backed by science. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, and it doesn't even defy any of the known laws of physics.
In fact, if it wasn't for the laws of physics, it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
And it follows every law of physics completely down the line. It's 100%. You could definitely run a steam engine off of water.
So
and its own heat.
Yep. So you'd be having two separate systems going on here. One would be the equivalent of a heat engine, which would be basically guiding the energy where you want it to go and only there. And the other one would be the equivalent of a steam engine. Both of them be running off of water. One of them would be separating hydrogen and oxygen, and the other one would be just using steam power alone. So even if you just took old technology, you could make an engine that was specifically designed to run using water technology. And this is what I've been trying to say forever and a day. But I don't understand. I sort of do, because they want to sell fuel oil. That's why they don't put this in, you know, practice as far as in the main auto industry. But for the average Joe, these concepts are something that you could actually do in a garage. You know, you don't necessarily even have to. See, he's got an electric steam engine right there, man. That's pretty cool there, Jermaine. Have you ever hooked a generator to it?
I could do, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the same engine I've got.
I used to have one, but it sprung a leak, and I sent it to somebody to fix it, and never got it back, and so I told them to keep it. Anyway, so the average Joe has the capability right now to look up some of these videos that I showed in there and replicate that technology. You mentioned earlier about Justin. He built one of those for his church over there, and they've been using it to heat their water and heat the building. And so there's one example. Talk to Justin about how he did his, and you can definitely see a difference in electric bills and electric usage, because you're not using a resistive heater element like you mentioned earlier in the deal. You know, those heater elements, they draw a lot of power when they're on.
Oh.
But an electric motor, and if you take that electric motor in, any electric motor out there, if you go to buy an electric motor, try to find one that has a built-in fan system or some sort of ports in the side that will allow airflow to go in there to keep that motor cool. That motor will last longer than any motor out there, as long as you keep the dirt out of it. You know,
well, you could always take it apart and drill some holes in it and make your own ventilation.
Yeah, cool. Modify it a little bit to be able to breathe. You know, you could actually even use some of the heat off of the doggone coils, transfer some of that heat in there as well. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yep, 100%.
So, if people wanted to get together and start building these devices and basically making, start from scratch and engineer a motor that runs off of either steam power or you know, hydrogen technology or even a combination of both, because there's no reason why you couldn't do both. Like, so that's why I was saying that even the ones that, what in the heck is he saying?
I have no idea.
Even the ones that are least efficient could be used as, you know, like supplements. You see what I mean?
Yes, sir.
And as far as lubrication in the deal, you could actually use the laws of physics to use some of that steam pressure to come back around and cool down certain parts that you wanted cooled down by using, you know, the HVAC technology, you know, heating and cooling, air conditioning stuff. If you take any gas and you pressurize it, it gets hot. Well, when you release that gas rapidly into an expansion chamber, it gets cold.
Yeah.
And that don't defy none of the laws of physics. Oh, he said that's what engine sounds like when Shaziz and Raymond say it.
Oh. Engine.
Yeah, that's it. He's from Texas and I'm from Missouri, so we both got these weird accents. Man, and Jermaine, he's from the Netherlands. So hey, let that be a lesson to you, Stephen Gibbons. All right. So that's the reason why I wanted to post these. If you guys get a chance to jump over there to ShazizRadio.com, check out some of these links, because if you just watch the video alone, might be a cool looking video, but if you actually think about it in mechanical sense and what's actually occurring in there, when you spin water and you get the centrifugal force of that water going around, water ain't going to stop automatically. You know, you're not just going to put your hand out there and stop it. It's got a lot of force. It's stored energy, just like the flywheel.
Yeah.
So imagine if you had an electric motor that was on a weighted flywheel that in turn had a magnetic rotor inside a sealed container of water, and you could build up stored energy in the weighted flywheel, that all this stored energy would transfer through to the via the magnetic force in between the two systems. They're not even directly bolted to each other. They're just using magnetic coupling to spin each other. And so you use that that stored energy in the weighted flywheel, and then you got the equivalence of another flywheel with impellers on it inside that water. Even after you stop running the electric motor, that centrifugal force is going to carry that weighted flywheel around for quite some time. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it could be done. It could be engineered, man. The video with the water spinning around, I mean, it literally looks like a tornado inside there. And he put different little balls inside there, and even big ones, and even a light bulb. And you could watch as the faster this thing got to spinning, it would literally suck that light bulb down to the bottom of the tornado look inside there. Really cool, man. But you'll actually see a working force. And so that motor, it doesn't have to really work hard. All it's got to be able to do is spin those magnets. So you could run that motor for a long time without it ever even getting hot. Any thoughts?
A starter motor, is that designed to produce a lot of torque, but in a short period of time, otherwise it would burn out?
Yeah, but under the right circumstances, as long as you can keep that thing cool, it would never burn out.
And what if you run it on maybe a couple volts less than required voltage?
So what's the purpose for that?
I don't know, I want
to make it more efficient.
To motorize a bicycle, maybe.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of permanent magnet DC motors that would work great for that. DC's got a lot of torque to begin with. And so you could actually turn the starter motor into it, but you have to find a way to cool that thing down a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. You know, make some sort of oil cooler and, let's say a belt drive connected to your wheel system would circulate oil around that electric motor, which wouldn't even interfere with it. You could make the electric motor sealed that had an oil chamber inside there that the oil would go around there. If you've ever looked into transformer technology, how they'll submersive a coil of wire down inside of the oil so that it, number one, don't short out, but it keeps it cooler at the same time when it's running under high voltage and stuff. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you modify that that starter motor to be able to be sealed where around the coils are and be able to circulate oil around that to take away that heat off of that both those coils, you would never have to worry about it burning up. That's the only thing that destroys an electric motor is heat.
Yep.
There's nothing else to tear it up. Unless you got some magnet fly off and cut into the wire or something, but nonetheless, the torque that starter motor was designed for, modified with some way to keep that thing extremely cool, you could run it as a electric bicycle motor. If you look at all the RC cars and all the modern day miniaturized electric motor, they got built in fans. And even if you take your AC version for your doggone blender, you ever seen how many RPMs those blenders have?
Yeah.
Those things are screaming little motors.
I got one engine, one motor, electric motor with a blender.
Yeah, those things are really fast. When they ain't under a load, those things got some serious RPMs to them, and they have built-in fans to cool down the coils.
Yeah, but they're designed to do a certain job.
Yep. But if you ever wanted to make a little mini generator to produce nothing but high voltage, then you'd want all the RPMs that you could get a hold of. So if you started off with 120 volts AC and you built a flywheel system across the coils that would spin those across, like, you know, magnetrons, like magnetos that you've got for lawnmowers or even fish tank air pumps, and you spin that across there, you're going to get some serious high voltage out the other side.
You know, vegetable oil, quite a few vegetable oils do not even boil until it hits 600 degrees.
Well, there you
go. Your insulation on your wiring of an electric motor or generator will withstand 600 degrees. Now, here's the thing. Water boils at 212 degrees sea level, Fahrenheit. So what I'm thinking is you make a heat transfer unit and you use you encase your coils on your electric motor or your generator. You encase them to where you can flood them with vegetable oil.
Yeah.
That way you can turn up the RPMs of your magnets unbelievably high. Use very weak magnets so there is very little resistance, but yet it's creating a tremendous amount of voltage. Your vegetable oil is taking the heat off your coil. You make a heat transfer unit to transfer that to water. And now you're creating hot water, really hot water, and electricity all at the same time.
Yep, and the reason why I'm so fascinated with high voltage is because number one, it's normally considered to be waste junk energy, because you can't run things off of it, because high voltage will actually eat right through insulation. If your insulation ain't strong enough to withstand that high voltage, if you look in the back of your televisions, especially the older CRT monitors and stuff like that, there's a special cable that runs the high voltage in that's insulated. That type of insulation, if you wrapped an electric motor, would be a pretty thick electric motor.
I think that
that lead that comes from the output of the flyback, I got two of those, and I think they have three layers of insulation. It's crazy.
Yeah, but that's so that it withstand the high voltage, high frequency that's coming through it.
Yeah.
But anyway, the heating potential with high voltage is amazing. Moving energy rapidly, energizing gas into the plasma state, or basically rocking the water molecule using that high frequency to the extent where basically you're doing just like a microwave oven heating water. So the higher the frequency, since water is a dipole molecule, the higher the frequency, the faster those doggone water molecules are going to rock back and forth. You see what I mean?
The more friction, the more heat.
Yep. So basically what would have been waste energy or junk energy or like, you know, heat losses in systems now become a plus, because now you're using those heat losses for a purpose. So you built this engine that spun up water to produce steam, to run a steam engine, and the waste energy off of the electric motor would be recaptured by its own little circulating system that you could use to actually heat the cabin of your vehicle. You see what I mean?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And by using oil, like you said, that electric motor would never go bad, but you could also use the heat, transfer that heat from the oil. You know, did you say like vegetable oil that you was talking about? Or mineral?
Raymond did, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so basically you got a heating system that runs on vegetable oil, and it's just constantly recirculated or back around the electric motor. So the harder you run that electric motor, the hotter it gets inside there, but the electric motor stays just fine because it's taking all that heat away and transferring it in through a heater core that would then in turn heat the cabin of your vehicle.
Exactly.
What do you think?
And if it was a diesel engine that can run on vegetable oil, you can use your cooling stuff reservoir for your fuel.
And that's another thing. If you took the internal combustion engine, and there's a lot of people that build race cars that already use oil coolers to cool down the oil so that they can keep their engines running harder and not getting as hot. That energy that's in there, it could now be reused instead of letting it go out into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You could use it to heat the cabin of the vehicle just by the temperature of the oil, which in turn would help the oil out because you're taking that heat away from the oil via that heat transfer system.
You got to think about this a minute. What about your automatic transmission? They give off a lot of heat, and you actually have an automatic transmission oil cooler that's built into your radiator.
Yeah.
A lot of heat there.
If you want to make it better, then you separate those two systems from the water system, from the oil, and the transmission, so that they are all independent systems themselves, and none of that heat is like, if the engine water temperature gets hot, that water temperature will transfer into the transmission, which will cause the transmission to basically match the temperature of the engine. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
But if you separate them, they'll have two different temperatures going on there. And that wasted heat energy could actually be transferred into electrical energy.
Exactly.
So there's all kinds of possibilities there. It's all about whether or not somebody really wants to take the time to properly engineer something. If you wanted to build you a electric generator using, let's say, an old diesel engine, and you had an automatic transmission that you were going to use that automatic transmission to run a 10,000 or 12,000 watt generator head. Well, when that generator head gets under load, it's obviously going to start producing some heat. It's going to produce heat in the generator head. from the drag on it. It's going to produce heat in the transmission from the drag on it. And it's going to produce heat from the water inside the water jacket from all the heat build up there, and as well the oil system. So now you got, what, four separate systems that are producing heat? You get,
and should this waste energy isn't wasted, it is energy you waste.
Yeah. You know, that's why I keep saying, if there was ever any proof of over-unity, the internal combustion engine should be it. Now, the internal combustion engine, they say, is only 36% efficient. That means a lot of energy is getting wasted. Mostly
not used.
In heat. Huh?
Not wasted, not used.
Well, yeah, I guess.
I like that. Unused energy. You're throwing it away. It's not waste. You're just throwing it away. It's good stuff. You can use it.
So, if you modify everything that you know is going to produce heat, that would normally be a bad thing, because heat is a destructive force that tears up everything. When everything reaches its thermal breakdown point, it starts to fail. Insulation on wire, parts, and you know, your oil viscosity will get thinner because of the temperature of it when you know, it basically begins to break down your oil. And if you can keep your oil at the perfect temperature, then none of your parts in your vehicle would ever fail. Period.
Yep. The thing is, we're not talking anything at all about the exhaust of the internal combustion engine.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't have an exhaust manifold or tailpipe or muffler, you'll burn your valves up in the motor.
Yeah.
You need the back pressure to keep burning your valves up. Then instead of a muffler, why don't we just put a propeller inside the tailpipe? There's your back pressure and that propeller turning a generator, making electricity.
Well, I got to add something to that. You need the back pressure off of the exhaust, but you don't need the heat off the exhaust.
All right. So now all of a sudden you take your muffler and you hollow it out. And now you put filter devices around the muffler. So that's going to take the heat off. Well, with the heat taken off, now it's not going to burn your propellers on your wind turbine.
You could also...
So think about all that. It's like Jermaine said, it's not waste heat. The only waste is you're throwing it away.
Yep.
You could also engineer into the actual exhaust manifolds themselves a water jacket that would take the heat away from that exhaust.
Exactly. There you go.
So, by using water technology, you can transfer the heat away to wherever you want it. See, when I talk about that water engine, I had a word that I was using for it that basically it was a guided heat system. It guides the energy where you want it to go. And so, if you focus, that's it, a focused heat engine, that was what I was calling it. The thing is, you want the heat inside the cylinder if you're going to be running a piston. All right, because that's what's going to cause the compression ignition to, burn your fuel. And so you focus the heat energy where you want it to go, and you move it away from the engine where you don't want it to be. So if an engine was properly designed, then you should be able to, after that thing been running for a year solid, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, if that engine was running as hard as it had to run, you should be able to walk up there and put your hand on it and it wouldn't burn you, because the heat would be transferred to where you want it to be and not into the block of the engine. Once that block of that engine gets too hot, guess what happens? It has the potential to crack.
Right.
When the engine cracks, it breaks your water jacket or blows out a seal, and water gets where you don't want it.
Water gets to your oil is useless, pump's useless.
Yep. because of that, now your viscosity has changed to the extent that now parts are rubbing up against each other, plus that heat's transferring into the water, which is causing it to get even hotter. So,
yeah.
There you go, man. The answers are right there in front of your face, everybody. If you take the most brilliant minds you got in your communities and start engineering properly, you could beat the main industries in there at their own game. You could make super efficient machines that would give you everything you need. Who would have thought?
My bitch.
Who would have thought that you could get cool from heat, man?
Really?
But they do it all the time.
Isn't that how ammonia refrigerator works?
Yeah, basically compresses the gas.
Yep.
And when you compress a gas, it basically produces heat. That's air compressor technology. For those folks that don't know what we're talking about, go find somebody that has an air compressor, turn it on, let it run for a while, and then reach up there and touch the head of that air compressor.
Ow!
You only do it once. They generate a lot of heat while it's compressing air to fill that tank up. And if you notice that inside that tank, there's a valve at the bottom of that tank where every so often you have to drain water out. That's because as that air is being compressed into that tank, it's expanding rapidly into that tank until it finally gets pressurized, and the temperature difference on the outside of that tank as opposed to the temperature difference on the inside of that tank causes condensation, because you're actually dragging air in from the outside, which has hydrogen and oxygen, and you're producing moisture inside that tank, which in turn produces water. Too much water inside your tank will literally rust the tank from inside and out, and then you'll have a failure. Right? So every so often you see all the roofers go over there and drain all the water out of their air tanks so that water don't accidentally get sucked up into their air tools and stuff like that and cause it to rust inside and mess it up. Pretty cool, man.
My dad showed me a little gizmo, and it's a little thing with all the possible or all the spark plug threads, and if you have a 4-cylinder engine, you can take one spark plug out, put that thing in, it's actually a valve, and you can run your engine on 3 and use that other you could use that other cylinder to pump up your tires, or use it as a compressor.
Cool. And speaking of compressors,
runs on 3 cylinders, and it uses the 4th one for whatever you want to use it for.
Speaking of compressors, what if I said that you could pull water right straight out of the air using air compressor technology?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, if you had, let's say you had built you a stainless steel tank, because stainless steel is pretty good to use because it doesn't, rust up like regular metal, ironwood. And so stainless steel they use in industries for food because you can cook, and put like the milk. They use stainless steel in milk factories so that it doesn't basically...
Yeah, food safe.
Yeah, it's food safe. It don't contaminate the food. Well, we know that if you put this air tank in the shade, that's a temperature difference, right? And if the compressor is getting hot and it's sucking in air from the outside and then hits that cool tank, it's instantaneously going to start building up what inside that tank?
That's exactly what your air conditioner does.
Yeah, that's why when you're driving your car and you stop at the store to get out and you see something leaking out from under your car and you're like, what the heck is that? That's the temperature difference, building up condensation, draining out. And there's a lot of water that's built up through an air conditioner.
You know that if you captured the water off the backside of an air conditioner, if you captured that water at a small pump, that when it got to a certain level, it would pump and spray that water over the coil, it would increase the efficiency of your air compressor by 20%.
Yeah.
So you'd burn less electricity running your air conditioner.
Yay.
Well, not to mention, if you really wanted to be slick about it, you could put a water tank in the back of your vehicle and capture all that water and fill that tank up while you're driving down the road and have some emergency water supply.
And it would be really cool water, too.
Yep. Using that cool water to actually help cool down the cabin.
Spray a little spray fine mist to cool yourself up. Fine cold mist.
Folks, it ain't because we don't have the technology, it's because people ain't put the pieces of the puzzle in the right order. It's as simple as that. Put them in the right order, you'll have super efficient equipment that will last for long periods of time, and you'd be surprised at what you can do if you understand basic science. And here on the Mad Science Show, you hear us getting mad because we hear a bunch of ignorance going on out there in the world, and we're saying, look, you're going to be fighting wars over oil and resources, and the Earth is three-quarters covered in water, and water is one of the most stable but one of the most destructive molecules on the planet if used improperly. I mean, you can cut through stone and steel with pressurized water. So, that's a lot of power. And the other force of nature out there that is really destructive but really useful at the same time is heat. We need heat to keep us warm in the wintertime. We know that we can use heat to generate electricity using thermoelectrics, thermal couples, thermal piles, Peltier elements, steam engines. We can use those two forces of nature hand in hand with each other because we know...
Stirling engines.
Yep, Stirling engines. There's another prime example. They don't use a fuel. They use expansion and contraction of heat, temperature.
They use the difference in temperature.
Yep. I read somewhere that one-third of the state of Arizona covered in solar panels would power the entire United States. I also read somewhere that one-third of the state of North Dakota set up with wind turbines could power the entire United States. And the wind blows in North Dakota 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks out of the year.
Well, see, even in solar technology, I don't think that they take solar technology far enough, because I think every single thing out there could be made so super efficient and be credible. Imagine you're a solar panel...
The only problem with solar power is the sun doesn't shine 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But the wind in North Dakota does blow 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at 30 to 35 miles an hour.
Well, for those of you that are worried about the sun not shining enough, go over to my YouTube channel and look up solar-powered flashlight, and you'll see something pretty amazing. Basically, I'm using the equivalence of a birthday candle in front of a solar panel to produce electricity and light up a light bulb. And so that means that in the sun, when it's sun's ain't out, you go out there and build you a campfire next to your solar panels and you're still producing electricity. Huh?
It's magic.
Imagine that. Magic. But if you want to make that solar panel even more efficient, check out the efficiency of a solar panel in the wintertime when the sun's out, as opposed to in the summertime when the sun's out. Just like thermoelectrics, when the thermoelectric gets to a certain temperature, it stops the reaction because now you don't have a difference. When everything's balanced out, when both of these pieces of metal, which both have different melting temperatures, reach the same exact temperature, they will end the process of thermoelectrics. It stops because it's all balanced out. Everything is equal, so there's no electric charge being produced any longer. But if you have a way, just like with the Peltier element, to keep one side colder than the other, there will always be a temperature difference. So even with a thermocouple, if you modified a thermocouple or a thermopile, then you wouldn't be limited in how much electricity that you could produce, because one side will always have a temperature difference. It's when both sides temperature match each other that the process stops. What do you think?
Yeah, if there is a difference of potential, there is a possibility for energy.
There you go. So we even have the capability of making thermocouples and thermopiles more efficient just by making one side cooler than the other. Put a heat sink on one side. Leave it open to the atmosphere. Keep the other one in a closed system. And there you go, man. Both sides can never reach the same temperature, so it will always have the potential energy that can be extracted.
You know, the beautiful part about the thermopile is you can reverse it. You heat one side, cool the other, it makes electricity, it makes DC, which is direct current, and you turn right around, take the heat off the hot side, put it on the cold side, and then cool the hot side. It just makes the electricity go in the opposite direction and go.
Well, if you ever mess around with Peltier elements, you put power to them. One side is hot, one side is cold.
I got a couple of hundred of them.
So, you can cook on one side and you can cool on the other.
Jermaine, didn't I send you a few?
You sent me some PCO crystals.
I didn't send you any Peltiers?
No.
Oh, Lord, you've got to have some of these. I'll get them in the mail next week. You've got to have some of these. They are so fun to play with. Oh, Lord.
Bring it to me personally.
Huh?
Bring it to me personally.
Yeah, jump on a plane and go over and visit.
All right, we can try to do that. We can try.
All right, so we talked about a completely different way that you could use water to build an engine now. You can either use hydrogen technology by separating the hydrogen and oxygen using the electrolysis process, you can separate it using sound waves, you can separate it using radio waves, you can separate it using heat and pressure. So there's many ways to extract hydrogen and oxygen, which answers all the people's question out there. Now the question that you've got left over is how to do it in the most efficient manner possible.
Yes.
With this particular design with the water hammer, you wouldn't even have to worry about separating the hydrogen and oxygen, because all you're going to do is bring the water temperature up to boiling and produce steam, and that steam will produce pressure, which in turn will turn turbines or a transmission that will spin water and give you yet even more heat. See, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but you can move it around, you can manipulate it, you can change the form of energy. It's wonderful. And in the process of nature balancing that back out, you get work done. Like right now, you could go out there and run your lawnmower, mow your grass, and then before the actual temperature of that lawnmower gets down to its natural state again, you can put your frying pan on the top of that lawnmower and cook your eggs and stuff. So, you didn't waste that energy. You used it because when you got done, you were hungry, and you put a frying pan on there, and you cooked your food on that heat of that air-cooled motor that never really got cool.
It's just this. That's what we used to do when I was actually working with my tools.
Yeah.
In the wintertime, we would wrap our lunch in tinfoil, lay it on top of the motor, crawl it in the truck, turn, start the motor up, we could have a warm lunch, right?
Well,
we get ourselves warm and cook our lunch at the same time.
Let me tell you a funny story. It's a true story. We were driving down a road going somewhere, me and my uncle. Can't remember where we were going, just out and about. But all of a sudden, he pulls off the side of the road. And I'm like, what the heck's wrong? Are you having car trouble? He says, nope. So he gets out the doggone truck, walks around the front, pops the hood on there. And I'm like, I thought you didn't have no car trouble. And I jump out and look and see what he's doing. He said, oh, I ain't got no car trouble. I just need to refresh my coffee. And so he pulls this deal that he had sitting down on the motor that was basically percolating his coffee while he was driving, and poured him a hot cup of coffee, put the deal back together, and shut the hood and got in the car, in the truck, and we started driving down the road. And I said, man, I've been done seeing it all now.
Oh, well, that was ingenious. I love it.
Yeah. He said that when they used to go back and forth to California all the time, that's they wouldn't even have to stop to park and light up a barbecue. They'd just put their steaks and stuff in aluminum foil like you were talking about, and stop every so often to check on how they were doing. So he was heating his coffee and cooking his breakfast, everything, driving down the road, man.
Worked great for T-bone steak and baked potatoes.
Yeah, he had it down to a science, though, because he could literally put, you know, food in there, and he knew exactly how many miles it would take to get before his food would be cooked, so he wouldn't overcook it. And then he'd hop out, scrape it onto a plate, and, oh, man.
That is ingenious.
Yep. That's what I'm talking about. Man, see, if you took this type of idea... Let's say you only had a 2,500-watt generator, and normally your house would run off of, maybe 10 or 12,000 watts that you'd be pulling off the power line. Right. Well, you could transfer the heat off the engine into a coil system. You could literally build a stove that would use heated water to bring that, because water will boil at 212 degrees Fahrenheit at, what, sea level? All right, well... Depending on where you're at, you might get better results. But nonetheless, that engine's going to get hot. And how many degrees do you think that it takes to fry an egg?
Not many. You fry an egg on 200 degrees easy.
So there you go. Now you circulate that water through a coil system that sets up there on your stove where your elements used to set. You see what I mean?
Yeah. That is, water you're reading is hotter than 212 degrees because you've got a pressure cap on it. And they build the pressure with every degree of pressure. Every PSI of pressure, you've increased your temperature by 5 or 6 degrees.
And you could actually use thermodynamics to basically regulate the temperature of that by... One side is coming from the hot water side. The other side is coming from a cool water source. And so you got these two coils that are intertwined with each other. And whenever you want, like let's say you want it down to 100 degrees, but the water coming off your engine's over 220 degrees. And so you want to balance this out so you can cook your food. You just turn one valve down and one valve up, and so you're getting more cold water than you are hot water. So now you can regulate the temperature on your stove.
Yep.
You know what? That's going to make a good YouTube video.
Yeah, it is.
I need to find a little diesel engine that has a water jacket on it. And I need to get an old stove, electric stove, take the electric elements out, replace them with two copper elements in each one of them, and circulate cold water through one element and hot water through the other element. And then a valve system to actually adjust the temperature on there. And that's redneck engineering at its finest.
Yes, it is.
Because I'd be able to use the generator... The motor to run a generator head that I would be using for electricity so I can record everything with the computers and play some music or whatever. And then the other one I could sit there and cook some food on a stove that is only using water to be circulating through there. What do you think?
Yes.
I think that is a killer idea. I love it.
And back in the old days, they used to have radiators. That there was in the basement of these big old apartment complex, there'd be a radiator. And they basically would run steam all the way through this entire complex, and these radiators would give you radiant heat. Well, I knew a few times when the electric people's electric bill went too high, and they actually got their electricity shut off, and they had to make it to payday. They did all their cooking on the doggone radiator.
Aye.
Because those radiators get hotter than crud.
Yes, they do. They'll burn you.
Yeah.
That's why they put guards around them.
So, necessity is the mother of invention, man. Redneck engineering.
Holy cow, that is a cool, cool idea. I love it. I want to see that done.
Had they known back then about Peltier elements, They could have used those radiators to produce electricity for lights and to charge batteries and stuff.
Yep. And with the lighting systems that we've got now, the LEDs, you could light your whole house.
Mike put in the chat room a link to, let me read this deal real quick.
You know, the beautiful part about Alterio is there's no wasted energy. You can heat your house and make electricity at the same time, of the same heat, and you don't lose any of that heat. It's in your house.
Mike in the chat room put a link in to a multiple expansion engines use heat more than once. And there's an actual patent out there. I'm gonna bookmark that patent and I'll study it up and I'll talk about it in detail sometime soon. But that's the whole key, man. Being able to, you know, instead of it's gonna generate the heat whether you like it or not. So you might as well utilize that heat for a useful purpose as opposed to just pumping it out into the atmosphere. Imagine what it'd be like in the city. You know how cities, if you've ever been around like really high traffic areas, it's really hot in that general vicinity because you got probably about 1,000 cars that are running at 200 and some odd degrees, and that heat's got to go somewhere. And so if you're standing down in the middle of the city, you know, it gets pretty warm during the summertime when you got all these hot cars sitting there idling at the stoplight. You see what I mean? But imagine if you took that heat away from those cars and you focused it into where you wanted it to go. You could control that heat. You can control any energy. You can send it down the pipeline to wherever you want it to go and get some use out of it. What do you think? You guys are going to sleep on me, man. Either Raymond's got his mic muted or Jermaine... asleep in the, at the wheel. Wake up!
No.
Alright, so a diesel engine, you know, you can allow to idle for long periods of time. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of diesel trucks that they never shut off. When they're out there on the road, especially during winter time, they will leave these things running because if a diesel engine doesn't get started in the winter time, and it stalls for some reason, they're a pain in the neck to get started again. But because the fuel has oil in it, it doesn't wear down the rings like it would in a gasoline engine. It doesn't wear down the cylinders. So you can leave a diesel engine running all day long and it's not going to hurt it, even at idle speed. A gasoline engine, you try that, it will actually develop a groove up inside the piston, which in turn will cause failure at some point because there'll be a little lip inside there where it was only idling so high and so it was only wearing on the cylinder from the rings going up and down. Now with a diesel engine that don't matter because it's lubricated. So if you got a diesel engine and you're driving to and from work, when you get home you could plug into your car and leave the diesel engine running, use electricity off the diesel engine and the heat that is being generated to circulate through a water system through your house that would keep your house warm. So the only time you would need electric element of any kind would be when you're gone, so that your water don't freeze up when you're gone. You see what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Greg mentioned about a diesel engine being able to idle for long periods of time because of the oil in the fuel. The thing is, if you use vegetable oil, in warm weather, vegetable oil is, diesel fuel is four times more abrasive than vegetable oil.
Yep.
Consequently, that means that their engine would run four times as long for the same amount of damage.
But if you took that diesel engine, that same diesel engine, and you modified how you're putting that fuel in there, and you got a perfect burn off that every single time, your oil would never get black. It'd never get cruddy, because what happens in a diesel engine is the harder you run those, believe it or not, in every single piston, there's rings on those pistons that are split rings. They're not solid. And those are because you need that spring tension up against the cylinder to produce a seal when that thing... compresses and what are you doing over there? Anyway, when you're running these things hard and you're not getting a perfect burn, some of that carbon is actually blowing by the rings. And that carbon blow-by that's going into your oil system down there is what causes your oil to get cruddy. So if you designed a special ring that would continuously keep a really tight seal on that, that wouldn't wear out fast, so that you couldn't get no blow-by, your oil would never get dirty. But if you modify the system to get a perfect burn every single time by only putting the amount of fuel necessary in there, the faster you go, the less fuel you put in.
You know, there's another reason for this split ring. You have a gap in there, and that's so that when the engine gets hot, as it heats up, the ring expands, and that split actually comes together to where there is no split.
Yeah.
If you get too hot, then it starts scrubbing a blunt case of cylinder wall a little harder, and there's where you get your wear.
Yeah.
You keep it at a certain temperature. Now, if you don't, if you run the engine cold, really cold, try to cool it too much, the rings don't get hot enough to come together.
But there are materials out there.
You put the motor at that temperature all the time.
There are materials out there that will expand when they get hot and contract when they get cold, that could literally be perfectly engineered to expand and produce that seal and not do any damage.
Exactly.
And by controlling it from the input first, by taking and putting the fuel in just the amount necessary to produce the downward thrust of the piston, you would never have any carbon blow-by, even with the old-style rings, because you'd get a perfect burn every single time.
I just got a heck of an idea. What if you made the rings, a split ring, but made it into a complete circle and actually overlap, so that now one end of your split is smaller than the other end. The other end has a hole in it, so that it actually could telescope inside of itself. Then you'd have a complete ring.
Yeah.
What do you think of that idea?
Well, I think it's brilliant, because you could actually develop rings that would be offset. One side would have a little notch or a nub on it, and it would go in the split of the other ring.
Yep.
You know, and alternate them back and forth, so that you would get very little blow by, if any at all.
Right.
But see, that's what causes engine failure is the doggone temperature, number one, and the crud builds up inside the oil that causes your oil to literally become gritty, that then in turn starts to wear, just like Jermaine just did a perfect one on there.
Yes. He just threw exactly what I was talking about.
If you ain't got no carbon blow-by coming out of the cylinder past the pistons and rings into the oil, then your oil would never get gritty and it wouldn't start wearing on parts. If your oil temperature and the engine temperature was regulated to the extent that it would never reach its thermal breakdown, then your viscosity of your oil would always remain perfect for lubrication. Your engine parts would never reach their thermal breakdown, and they would never fail. You wouldn't have any little straps of metal down inside there in your oil pan, which modern day engines, if you ever pull the oil plug off the drain plug, you'll see there's a little magnet on there that catches a little shavings so they don't get recirculated back into the engine. But by re-engineering the internal combustion engine to be the epitome of perfection, you wouldn't be wasting anything. Everything would get recycled, and that engine would be so super efficient, and it would last for ages. There's some engines that, like that Lister engine that you got the video of, Jermaine. That engine, how old is that engine?
1925.
How many years is that?
92.
Yeah, 92,
you're right. 92-year-old engine still running today.
Yes.
That's amazing.
We also got a tractor from 1921.
See?
There you go.
Back then they made things to last. Today they make them as cheap as possible out of junk so that they fail.
It's economics. They want it to break down because if they sell you one that lasts forever, they can't sell you but one.
But here's the thing. Everybody knows that I'm one of those people that they call a climate change denier or global warming denier or whatever. They know that I'm probably the most hated man in science. That's all right. I can get by with that. But nonetheless, if they say that the world is doomed because of climate change and we got to reduce our carbon emissions, and I'm sitting here telling you exactly how it can be done, and you're not willing to go far enough to do it, to make it so, and make these engines last and run efficiently and cleanly. They talk about clean, renewable, alternative energy, and we have given them idea after idea, example after example, links, and the people in the chat room are popping links out there. And if you can't get it figured out by now, then you deserve everything that climate change has to offer, including the tax. You know, I know that sounds kind of rude, but doggone it, I'll call it mad science for nothing. You want to charge me a carbon tax for CO2, I'm breathing out CO2, so every time I open my mouth, it costs me money. You know, if I hold my breath, I can save a few bucks. What do you think?
Before we started the show, I asked you to work in red tide, and I think you just did. You just worked it in. We have come up with so many ideas that, and I mean, that are viable. They're not just maybe possible; they are 100% possible. The red tide, for example, off of the coast of the west coast of Florida in the Gulf of Mexico, it comes in. It covers hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of square miles. In fact, it absorbs so much oxygen out of the water that it actually kills the shrimp.
Yeah.
And the shrimp people in Florida, they whine and cry and carry on about the red tide, and they sit around in bars getting drunk and whine and cry in their beer because the red tide is killing the shrimp and it's ruining the shrimp industry. Duh. The red tide is nothing more than red algae. Red algae is 45% by dry weight vegetable oil. Vegetable oil will run a diesel engine. Almost all of your shrimp boats run on diesel engines. You take a diesel pump, positive displacement pump, that way it won't bind up and get chewed up and gummed up by the algae. You pump it through, filter it out, wash the salt out of it, dry it, run it through an extractor, extract the vegetable oil, and then so help me, in 2 or 3 months' time, you can get enough vegetable oil to run your cotton-picking diesel boats for shrimping for the next 6 years. And so help me, I don't know if it's right or not, but I heard somebody say somewhere that the red tide happens, you can almost set your calendar by it, it's once every 7 years.
Well, there you go.
You can collect enough vegetable oil to run your diesel boat for 6 years.
A free power source. And here's another thing, too. When you was talking about how worried about gumming up your pump, there's a guy out there, look it up on YouTube, he built a pump that would literally pump grease. He put grease in a bucket. I'm talking about solid axle grease. I mean,
I saw that pump.
And this pump had enough displacement in it, it could literally pump this grease out the other side of this deal. That's one heck of a vacuum, man. But there's a pump that would never, ever, ever plug up. You'd have to put dry-lock concrete in the other end of it to plug it up.
Yep.
And you would have to intentionally destroy that pump. You'd have to do it on purpose.
Yep.
Because any pump that can pump grease like a liquid, that's impressive.
That's so, very impressive.
Don't tell me we ain't got the technology to engineer perfect machines, because that man proved it. That's just one of many people out there that's proved it. But either way, take it how you want. There are people out there in this whole world to get upset because I talk about climate change as a bogus fraud. And First it was global warming, then it was climate change, then it was climate disruption, and who knows what's going to be next week when the math don't add up. Nonetheless, if they said that there was a problem and we're offering the solution and they're not taking the solution, what do you call somebody who refuses to take a solution to a problem that they say exists?
Dummy.
Yeah. Dummy's a good one. Idiot. Fool. They just want to complain, man.
Come up with these sayings several times. I want to add one more. One of the sayings is, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade.
Yeah.
My thing was, when life gives you crap, make fertile. Now, we got one more. When life gives you red tide, dummy, go get some free diesel fuel.
Yeah.
Hey, go on, man. Wake up.
And, see, during the whole BP oil spill, there was thousands of people that were sending in ideas on how to naturally clean that stuff up.
Right.
We have the technology right now that they could have literally drove over with some barges, and they could have pumped that oil and water right directly out of the ocean as it was coming out. They could have done it so rapidly, it wouldn't even have made a mess.
And what was a mess was floating before they got the barges and the pumps there.
Yep.
You simply take... How many helicopters are there in the United States? Duh, you take helicopters and you herd this oil where you want it, like into a cove, and then pump it out.
Yep.
You herd it, the oil, it floats on top of the water. So you just herd it and then push it wherever you want to go. But I saw a helicopter in it was an emergency helicopter, and somebody had to put it on YouTube. There was a deer that was caught out on a river that had been frozen over, and the ice was so slick, the deer had fallen, it couldn't get up. So they flew over, it was a news helicopter, and they were putting it on the news. And the helicopter pilot was trying to scare the deer enough to get him to get up and get off the ice, but every time he tried, he'd fall. So he just simply got down low and eased toward the deer, and with the wind from the helicopter, pushed him over to the banks.
Well, there
they
you go,
done
man.
The same thing with the oil spill. Push it into a big cove. And pumped it out there.
Well, see, back on the oil spill, their brilliant idea in the mainstream science and fuel industry was to put a chemical called Corexit that breaks down the oil supposedly to the extreme that small microbial bacteria can eat up the oil. Well,
you're saying algae is 45% oil. So what's that chemical going to do to the algae?
Well,
plankton and algae, it provides almost 100% of the food source for the ocean. Now, there's fish that eat fish.
Well, see, fish have oil in them.
Smaller fish, but you get down to the point where you get the fish to eat the krill and the algae.
Fish have oil in them, and they're floating around in that crud, man.
Yes.
So now you're dehydrating the fish, essentially.
If you don't believe fish have oil in them, go to your... pharmacy and look at the vitamin section. There's all kinds of fish oil.
Yeah.
That's how easy putty.
So.
I mean, dumb, man. And fat.
That was a brilliant
oil.
Idea.
I mean, what's it going to do to the whales?
Yeah.
And the killer whales, the shamu, the porpoises. What's going to do to them?
That was their brilliant idea, to pour a chemical called Corexit into the ocean by the thousands of gallons. From what I understand, they're still doing it to this very day. They never solidly fixed the leak. Gives me a headache, man. So, you know, here we are with some brilliant ideas. And if we're smart enough to figure these out, surely the mainstream science guys are surely smart enough to figure it out. But, you know, if it don't make money or if it don't make headlines, then it ain't worthy of their time.
Thing is, the solution is so simple that the smart people can't see it.
Yep.
It's like I can't see the forest because of all the trees.
Well, I'll tell you one thing for sure, man. If you're going to sit around and complain about it, if they're going to sit around and say, well, you know, I want to save the trees, and they got a wooden stick and a paper sign.
No joke.
Then you have to ask the tough questions. Are you stupid? You're sitting there saying, save the trees, yet you're holding a wooden stick and a paper sign. Wouldn't it have been better to get a plastic one? Oh, no, that wouldn't be ecologically correct either, because they say plastic lasts for thousands of years inside the dump, which is not true. It's another lie.
Yes, but it is.
Nonetheless, let them have what they have, because that's what they believe. But reality is, you got to practice what you preach. You got to, if you want to save the trees, then you get out there and shout it with your lungs. Save the trees, you know. Don't go out there with a wooden stick and a paper sign and tell somebody like me that the planet is getting deforested so rapidly. I live on a 13 acre piece of land. And I'm always out there cutting the grass and trying to mow paths. And if I leave that thing alone for a month, I got to go out there with a brush hog to mow it again.
Yep.
If I don't touch it at all, years from that, the thing becomes so overgrown that it's just crazy out there. I got to start all over from the get-go, cutting down
like
trees.
No planet has ever walked on that piece of ground again.
Yeah.
In 5 years, it would look as if nobody ever touched it.
That's right. See, nature, mankind is so arrogant. They think that that we're tough enough to destroy nature, when in reality, if you make nature mad, well, nature will just work you over.
Like,
you know? So, mankind thinks that we have the power to destroy nature. We got the power to pollute our fishbowl and make it so it's uncomfortable or even impossible for us to live in it. So it ain't nature that's in trouble, it's we the people that are in trouble. If anybody's going to lose in this, it's going to be we the people, because we haven't learned how to work in harmony with nature. We're sitting here on a radio show called Mad Science trying to tell you how you can work in perfect harmony with nature and waste absolutely nothing. The Zero Waste Project. That's what we're talking about. You're not wasting anything. Everything that you bring home, even your trash. Your trash gets recycled to the extent that now your trash is your treasure, because it's actually producing the energy that runs your house. Imagine that. You realize how much trash the average household generates?
Yeah.
Do you know what's in that trash?
That thing, yes.
Fuel. Unlimited. There's paper in there, there's plastics in there, there's metals in there, there's glass, there's all kinds of stuff, and food waste or whatever. So you can get methane, you can get crude oil, you can get petrol, gasoline, however you want to use it. You got the equivalents of firewood, you got all kinds of different fibers that could be reused. Nothing in your entire house would get wasted. If you built a compacting machine that would literally grind up and separate everything you threw in the trash into separate containers, not only could you get your trash to pay you back, but you would have energy sources that you could use. You wouldn't waste anything. You throw it down a disposal system and it ain't really disposing it. It's just separating it back into useful products that you can turn around and sell to the recycling bin. What do you think?
I think it would. Again, I don't think I know. You're 100% correct.
So, why ain't the industries out there working on ways by which you can... You see, if you go back and watch one of the old Back to the Futures, I think it was Back to the Future 2 or 3 or something like that. Old Doc Brown flies in the time machine, and he grabs up the, what's his name, and his girlfriend, and said, we got to go to the future. This is about you guys. And anyway, he gets ready to fuel up his tank, and the guy, Doc Brown's over there digging in the trash. He's throwing banana peels and soda and the can and all down inside this compacting deal. And he asks him what he's doing. He says, well, we're fueling up. It's Mr. Fusion, you know. He made a fusion machine that basically used everything for fuel. And then they get on the road, and he says, do we got enough road to get down through here? And that's when Doc says, roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
That was cool. That was a really cool movie.
Well, he showed you inadvertently in that movie some science fiction technology that could literally be science fact. You could yes. literally use your trash for fuel. Because science says that everything is made up of protons, neutrons, and electrons, basically aka atoms, you know, and molecules built up of multiple atoms and such. And so we know that by manipulating the atom, there's all kinds of stuff we can do. Shake around the atom, and you can shake loose the electron and get electric flow and stuff, you know. You could build super strong materials by combining them in certain directions or whatever. This material with that material, and now you got a super strong material that's bulletproof glass that you can see through. You know? Kevlar. Bulletproof or bullet resistant or whatever.
They've got plastic out there that are 3 to 4 times better than Kevlar. Yep. Lighter than Kevlar and stronger and will stop a heavier bullet.
They got heat resistant plastic. They got self lubricating plastic. They got self healing plastic. There's so many different potentials. I'm telling you folks out there, you're only limited by your imagination. If you think it can be done, then chances are it can be done. If your imagination's willing to do the research and put the right pieces of the puzzle together, you could build the perfect engines, the perfect generating, the self-contained, clean, renewable alternative energy that everybody keeps saying that they want. Now, there's a lot of brilliant researchers out there that do a lot of brilliant work.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned self-healing plastics. A lot of people don't understand what that means, self-healing. That means that if you made your car body out of this plastic, I wouldn't be in the car. I'd run it remotely because the concussion would kill you. But you could actually run a vehicle into a solid concrete wall at 35 miles an hour, and when it bounced off, within minutes, the plastic would come back to its original shape.
Yep. And if you scratch it, it's got polymers in there that just fills in the scratch, and there you go.
And it's plastic the same color all the way through.
Yep.
And like you said, if you scratch it, it would flow. And it would flow out and smooth itself right out. It's called self-healing plastic.
We got
an automobile that no matter how bad you wreck it, within minutes, it would look like brand spanking new again.
Yep, we got memory foams, we got memory metals, we got things that are just space age, and here we are in the year 2017, and we're still boo-hooing about global warming. Reduce your carbon footprint! You knuckleheads drive me nuts. One of these days, man...
Really?
Anyway.
Lemons, make lemonade. Life gives you crap, make fertilizer. Life gives you red tide, make diesel fuel.
The Earth is a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. It is a thermal electric generator, a static generator, a heat generator. It produces more energy than you could use in a trillion, 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 trillion lifetimes. There is no way physically possible that you could ever use up all the resources on this planet. It is not physically possible. The only possibility that you could do to get this planet to be energy deficient would be to start taking materials off the planet. You ship them all out into space. The more you take out into space, the less there is here on the Earth. And if you take too much of one thing out, you'll throw the whole system off balance and it'll fail.
Now you're using the smallest, most used word in the world, and that is if. Because the problem is, the energy being created on this Earth is far greater than man's ability to remove it off the Earth. You couldn't possibly do it. There aren't enough people.
That's right.
If you could put people side by side and form a bucket brigade, they couldn't take the energy off the Earth as fast as it's being created.
Let's say hypothetically, and space is the way that they say it is, and meteors are made of and asteroids are made of what they say they're made. Hypothetically, we use this nickel for fuel, and we take all the nickel out of the planet. All right, somehow or another, we can mine every bit of nickel, and we take it off, and we go flying off into space. Well, as we're coming back, all we got to do is grab up an asteroid that is made of iron and nickel.
Jermaine got his little steam engine running.
Cool. But, you know, when people are talking about resources and how we're going to run out of resources, they don't understand the laws of physics. And the laws of conservation of energy say the energy can neither be created nor destroyed, vice versa, whatever. Alright, look. No chemical that we have ever created on this planet is gone. It's still there. If you burn firewood, and you're getting wood ash out of firewood, and you're getting creosote up in your chimney, you just produced two different chemicals that made up the firewood. And the carbon that might have came up out of the stack that floated off out there is still out there. All right, and so now you just made three separate sources of material. And the trees continue to grow no matter how hard you try. If you stop using it, nature will put a tree there, and that's plain and simple. And so you just took that energy that was that firewood, you extracted off the radiant heat that you got from burning the firewood, and it created more elements that got put right back into nature. Even the stuff that went up out of the stack will mix it right back into nature. So every piece of material that was that firewood is still here. It didn't go anywhere. It's still on the earth. It's recycled back into the system, and it's reused. So there is nothing that we have ever created out of any material that material is completely gone. It's just changed chemistry, it's changed shapes, it's into a different form of matter, but it nonetheless, it's still here. And nature will break it back down, recycle it into the system. You can use wood ash to make lye soap, you can use wood ash for traction in the snow, you can get you out of a ditch by throwing some on your tires. You can use wood ash to take fertilize your garden with. It's unlimited. Everything out there that you see is a resource. And everything will get recycled back into the system. You're never going to run out of crude oil. You can't use it fast enough. It's not possible. Until nature stops doing what nature does, recycling everything, including you, animals, plants, everything. We're all carbon-based. We all have water. And all that gets recycled into the system. And there you go. So, man's arrogance to think that we could destroy this planet, that we can make it so uncomfortable we wouldn't want to live here, we can make it so toxic that we can't live here, but the system will continue to do what the system has done since it was put together by whatever divine entity or lucky stroke that ever happened. Whether you believe in the Big Bang or the creation theory, that's irrelevant. No matter how hard you try, you can't deny everything that was here, is here, and will always be here unless you take it off the planet. Period. So, there you go, man. And even the satellites that they put in space get sucked back down and smashed to the ground and recycled. So, what do you think, man? Except for the one we sent clear out to Pluto, we're never getting that one back. Unless it gets slingshotted around some big planet and thrown back at us, which is possible. What do you think, Raymond? Doggone it, you and that microphone. Anyway, mad son.
Well, I keep throwing you under the bus, but I get tired of you complaining about my squeaking chair. So when I have to get up or sit down, I turn my mic off.
Well, see, common sense dictates if you get tired of hearing me complain about the squeaky chair, throw some grease on it, boy.
You're the only one that complains.
That's because it's like, ree, 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 all the way through the show.
You know, I'm the kid that in school, if everybody got real rowdy, I'm the one that would run up to the chalkboard and scratch my fingernails across it.
Yeah. So you're an instigator, man.
Yeah,
an agitator. All right, just grease that doggone chair for Pete's sake. Anyway, so we've proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt, that energy's free. You just got to learn how to use it. It's as simple as that. Every bit of energy can be stored. Every bit of energy can be reused, recycled. You name it. It doesn't matter. When you burn water and the hydrogen and oxygen separate, and you get that implosive force from one portion and explosive from the other portion, and the electrical charge as they separate, then when it gets back out there and nature balances it back out, guess what happens with the hydrogen and oxygen? Anybody? Bueller?
No, I'm waiting for you to tell me.
They recombine. You get water.
Yes, okay. See, there again, it's so simple I didn't even think about it.
Yeah. So there you go, man. You got water for burning water. And when water evaporates, the oxygen and the hydrogen are released into the atmosphere. When water and hydrogen and oxygen find a cool spot, they recombine. And during that recombination, the water falls, which causes a cooling effect. And so, even trying to figure out a way to evaporate all the water off the planet is impossible. There's no way you can do it. We'd have to literally become the sun in order to burn all the fuel that's on this planet. That's it.
Thank you.
So, you guys both got a steam engine. I used to have one. Now I got to buy me one.
I got two. Did you see them both?
I saw one of them.
No.
I wasn't paying attention. I'm trying to do a radio show. You're trying to do show and tell.
No, okay. Sorry about that.
All right. So.
So.
And Stephen Gibbons said, and as you're shipping it out to space, dust and meteors are constantly bringing in more. There you go. Yeah, meteors are throwing material at us. So we got resources coming from space, for Pete's sake. So the creator said, oh, look, we're missing a little bit of iron down there on the planet. Throw that rock down there. Pow! Knocks a big hole in there that then becomes a lake, and they got more material, because when that rock is sitting in that lake, it's going to finally be dissolved by the water and turn into iron and, you know, minerals and such, and it's just brilliant. The creator of this planet was by far the most brilliant of brilliant. You know, there ain't none better. You know, I would love to stand next to God. For real. I'd like to be there and watch all this stuff designed. I wouldn't even open my mouth. I'd just be amazed. So that's how that works. That's pretty cool.
Magic.
Yeah. Basically, it is magic, because that's what the scientists say about about how electricity or how magnetism works. They can't really explain it, and so they say what holds the electron and the proton and the neutron together. They say, well, it's magic. We don't know. So they can't explain the unexplainable, and it's fascinating to me, but here we are in a world that says it's needs to be energy independent, it needs to be sustainable, it needs to be clean, renewable, alternative energy sources, and I'm telling you exactly how you can go about it. Now, this radio show should be like, you know, on every single radio station all over the planet, and all the brilliant minds of the planet should be jumping on there and helping us to get people motivated to build machinery that would be the epitome of perfection, because we have the technology right now to make this literally a heaven on earth. Shouldn't be anybody starving. Shouldn't be any wars over crude oil or resources, because there's more than enough to go around. If properly utilized, everybody could be driving a Ferrari or one of them really cool Koenigsegg cars, man.
I'd like an old timer.
Yeah, see, there you go, man. And you could drive it too, because that nobody could complain about it, because we could make it run so doggone efficient just by slightly modifying it that it wouldn't even be putting out any carbon emissions.
Yeah.
And still have the horsepower. And in reality, if you get a proper burn...
Looks.
Huh?
And the looks.
Yeah.
Come on,
looks perfect. You see, if you get a proper burn on your fuel, it means that you're going to be burning less fuel the faster you go, because you don't need as much fuel to push the piston down now. All right? And so you'd actually have to cut back on the fuel that you put in the faster you go. And you're getting a perfectly clean burn every single time because you're using the laws of physics to your advantage. If Lenz's law is creating a second magnetic field, and that second magnetic field that they call back EMF is causing a cogging effect that's acting like a brake on your electric motor, then you know you can't get around Lenz's law, then don't invoke Lenz's law. Take that energy that you want off the generator head, put it into a completely different state of matter in the form of plasma, which in turn can be transferred to heat, and now you don't have a direct coupling back to the generator head, and you will not have it bogged down, which means you'll use less energy to keep the thing going, and you'll still get the energy you needed out the other side. If what I'm saying is wrong, then somebody has to explain to me how the mercury arc rectifier was doing it back in the late 1800s to turn Tesla's high voltage AC into high voltage DC for Edison's elevator motors. Yeah. See what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
It's the
common sense crisis that we got, folks. We don't have an energy crisis. We don't have a resource crisis. We got a common sense crisis. You take tons and tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of raw materials and waste food, and you throw them in your trash bins. A big diesel engine truck comes over and picks up all your neighbor's trash and yours. They take it down there, and they recycle it, and they make money. So they charge you to take away your trash. They make money off your trash. They utilize the methane produced by the biological waste to run their machinery. And so they got a freebie that pays them a ludicrous amount of money. And they're going to the bank with a big smile on their face. And all you got to do is make sure you pay your bill. Otherwise, you're up to your neck in your own stinky trash because you don't know what to do with it.
I live in Louisville, Texas. My property is exactly 1/2 mile east of the landfill, Dallas-Fort Worth landfill. And you were right. They charge you to take your trash away. Then they bury it. It makes methane gas. They use the methane gas to boil water to run steam turbines to make electricity and then sell you the electricity back. So they're not... You talk about a perfect business. People pay you to take the raw materials that you turn into a product that they pay you for.
There you go. And that's what I'm saying. And for if you want to open a new job line, then go back in time and think about, they used to have these things called trash compactors, and they also still have the garbage disposal systems in your sink so that it grinds up the food in small enough where it can wash down the drain. Well, you got all that waste into proper containers, and there are ways using the laws of physics to separate heavier items, such as like metals will float to the bottom of a liquid. You know, oils will float to the top, and papers and whatever, because of their buoyancy or whatever, you can literally skim off. They do it when they do metallurgy or whatever, where they melt metals. All the heavy metals go to the bottom, the crud floats to the top, they skim off the top, and then they pour the clear, perfect liquid into the molds and make stuff. You know, sand castings and such. And so, you know, you could use the same laws of physics, the same basic science to separate this stuff, and you can design perfect machines that will, you know, magnets will pick up all the metal And then when the magnets, you'll use an electromagnet, picks up a metal, and then spins around, stops the electric flow to the electric magnet, drops all the metal down into one container, and then do the same thing with plastics or whatever. Static electricity can attract plastics. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, using Van de Graaff technology, you could make a static electric rotor that would pick up all the plastics and any papers and separate those according to their weight or whatever, you know, any of it could be picked up. So, all the liquids go into a tank, and now you've got a tank that is fermenting. If there's any sugars in there, it will produce CO2, which in turn will cause the pressurization. So you could have a CO tank, two tank on one side. On the opposite side, you could be collecting methane from the fermenting of the trash. Perfectly engineered system that will take your trash and turn it into the equivalence of Mr. Fusion, which Stephen Gibbons posted a link inside the chat room to, so that you could use all your waste from your entire house, including your septic tank out back, to run energy.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the CO2 building a pressure from the fermenting of sugars, because I've mentioned this several times before. The gas, the CO2 gas, fermenting sugar, will build pressures over 200 PSI. PSI will lift water 2 feet in the air. So 200 PSI will pump water 400 feet.
So there you go, man.
For the day, for 20-some days.
You pressurize a tank with CO2, and you can use that tank in a closed-loop system to literally use the pressure of CO2 to run an air engine.
Yes. But the thing is, I mean, and the thing is, you don't have to use an electric pump to pressurize the CO2.
All right.
It was on its own.
I got in my hand a Myers Brothers Premium Concord Grape from Concentrate. No preservatives and no added sweeteners. It's all natural concentrate juice. But one day, I went to pick this thing up, and there's only like maybe a quarter, a little under a half amount of stuff in there. I'm going to try to get this on film. Tell me if you hear what happens right here whenever I crack this lid open.
Yeah,
that's
sure. All right, now one day I went to get a drink of this, and I popped the lid open, and that sound came out, and I'm like, "Oh wow, guess what? I'm making wine."
Yeah.
So all I got to do is take this pure concentrate, and I build up CO2 pressure, which is literally expanding the container that it's in, and if I never relieve that pressure, then it will get to the point where it will literally explode the bottle. So every day I come in here and I relieve the CO2 off of it, and essentially I got wine in the process of being made. I keep doing that until there's no more CO2 to be made, and it's ready to go. You got wine made from no additives and no yeast was put into it or anything like that. It just sat in a warm room, and after not being used for a while, it started to ferment. And that ferment was producing enough pressure to literally expand the sides of this bottle to where it was all tight. So you could use that same system to pressurize a container of CO2 that you can turn run an air engine when the PSI got up to a certain pressure or whatever. What's it, 90 PSI will run an air tool?
Yes, sir.
Well, there you go. And if you got access to 200 PSI from what you was talking about, then...
Overdrive.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I'm saying 200 PSI because I know it'll go that high. But you can put 200 PSI in a wine bottle and it not hurt the bottle. But CO2 fermenting wine, if you don't open it up and release that pressure, it will break the wine bottle. It will cause it to explode like a hand grenade.
Yep. And that's why.
How much pressure the CO2 and fermenting sugar will actually create? How much pressure? I don't know.
That's why wine cellars are wine cellars, because they put them down there to keep them cool so that they do not ferment rapidly and cause an explosion. Otherwise, if you had a wine cellar that got hot, you'd go out there and find wine all over the wall because all the corks would pop.
You better wear your shoes, because there's going to be a lot of broken glass all over the place.
Oh, yeah. But see, Eric, we just took some little example of something as simple as grape juice that was now an energy source. What could you do with CO2? Well, you could do the same thing with CO2 that you do with any of the noble gases out there. You can energize CO2 in the fourth state of matter, being plasma.
You know, the thing is, think about it. Think about the people that live out in the country or in the suburb and have a garden, and they grow sweet corn. Well, you pick the sweet corn before it dries. Well, when the stalk is green, there is more sugar, and I mean real sugar, in the corn stalk than there is starch in the corn. All you have to do is run that corn stalk through a roller and squeeze the liquid out of it and ferment it.
Well,
so there's the source of energy right there. We keep telling people about different sources of free energy. That is free energy.
Not to mention,
they're throwing it away.
Plants love CO2. So you could make wine in your greenhouse, and you could have a pressure valve on your wine bottles that when the pressure got up to a certain pressure, it would hit a pop-off valve that would release CO2 into your greenhouse and feed your plants. Doggone it, folks, wake up!
Yeah.
If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Drive me to drinking, man. I'm going to drink that wine when it's done.
Yeah, here's another solution. Think about this. You're growing sweet corn to eat. Okay, so now you're growing food for you and your family. But then you take the stalks, you peel the leaves off of them, and lay them out in the sun to dry.
Yeah.
You run this through your roller, squeeze the sugar out of it, you ferment it to make alcohol to run your vehicle, and pump water uphill so that you can let it come back downhill and make electricity.
You
squeeze up corn stalk, chop them up into little sections about 3 or 4 inches long, take all those dried leaves, cut them up, and you mix them together, and you have absolutely beautiful animal food for cattle, goats, sheep, horses, whatever. It's fantastic food.
Hey,
There is no waste.
Raymond, I think you're going to love this one.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, you're always talking about pumping water using CO2. Well, also throw in the Venturi effect at the same time. You know, you could use the Venturi effect to literally force water up a siphon up the highest as you want to go and do it making your wine.
Yeah.
Your wine's out there fermenting, and it's creating CO2 that's being released up a hose that has a Venturi on it that's siphoning water out of the creek at the same time and shooting it up over the hill. And, you know, basically it's all regulated by valves. It ain't going to do nothing until the CO2 pressure rises up. And once you got a couple hundred pounds of CO2 pressurized, it'll release that tank, and as that CO2's been forced through the water and up and through that hose there, it's going to create a vacuum and suck that water right up the hill.
You are absolutely right. It would do it. It would not suck as much water up the hill as it did, with the other, but it is a way of using that pressure positively, making your whole entire system more efficient.
Yep.
She says, there is also a device that consists of a lot of tubes and valves, and it can raise water higher than its beginning point, but it uses a lot more water, but it does raise a smaller amount of water higher up.
Well, if you ever go to the ball stadium these days, they got these CO2 cannons where they'll shoot a doggone hot dog or a t-shirt three stories up in the air, and that sucker will slap you in the face if you ain't paying attention.
Yeah.
That's CO2 pressure.
Uh-huh.
So, if you can get hit in the eye with a hot dog flying at Mach 10 from an air cannon from somebody standing down on the field of a football stadium. Look, folks, I've said it before, I've said it again. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough because you're surrounded in it. And if you learn how nature works, nature will always balance out nature, no matter what. We only get work done in the process of nature balancing itself out. So when a wind blows by, it can go through the north side of my house and out the south side of my house, or vice versa. I didn't have to pay for that wind. And I might have got work done that I didn't want done, like it blew all the papers off my desk, or, you know, blew stuff over.
But it can be controlled.
Yep. There you go.
Shut the window, dummy.
Yeah. Simple as that.
Exactly. You can control it.
You can use that force to turn turbines. You can use that force to vibrate magnetic strips that will in turn produce electricity that will, you know, charge your batteries.
Hey, you know how a wind instrument works, right?
Yep.
What they call a reed wind? You have a reed that's super thin, you blow across it, and it vibrates. In fact, it doesn't even have to be a reed. It can be a piece of metal really thin that's magnetic.
I saw...
by a copper coil, and then you just blow a little bit of air across it, it vibrates super, super fast.
Yep.
I mean, think about that.
I saw a sculpture one time that was so precisionally made that it barely needed any wind for motion to occur on that sculpture. It was mind-blowing, because you could stand out there and you could try to figure out which direction the wind was actually coming from, but you couldn't, because some of the wind that was actually being utilized was because of the materials that they made this, and the color that they had painted them caused the sun beating down on them to get hot. As that heat rose and mixed with the cool air, it created a vortex of air that continuously kept this thing turning.
Okay, did you ever see my video on YouTube about my Sabonis wind turbine?
Uh-uh.
The last video I made of the Sabonis, I'm standing on my porch with a lit cigarette, and you can see the smoke almost going straight up. I put the camera on the leaves and the trees, and you can barely see movement. I went out to the Sabonis wind turbine. It's turning. That thing is turning like 30 or 40 RPMs. It weighs over 140 pounds, the blades, just the blades on the turbine. So it is its own flywheel, yet it's turning. I took up my wind gauge, held it up. It was reading 0.0. The wind was not even measurable to a tenth of a mile an hour. It was running less than a tenth of a mile an hour. And yet the Sabonis was sitting there turning, and there was no fakes to it. There was no electric motor on it turning it or nothing.
Well, if you've ever had the displeasure of being a roofer, and you was up on a roof in the middle of the summertime, and the wind is not blowing at all, and you wished it was, but yet somehow or another, those wind turbines, those vents for the doggone attics were still turning?
Yes.
That's because that heat box up underneath there is producing heat that is trying to escape, and heat rises and cold air falls, and as that heat rises out into the atmosphere that's already a temperature difference cooler than what it is inside that attic, it produces a vortex of wind that turns that doggone turbine, even when the wind isn't blowing. So there's another example in what you talked about your wind turbine there. You could perfectly engineer windmills and wind turbines to, even when the wind isn't blowing outside, still produce electricity just by the heat of the sun.
Yep.
I did that video series called Free Thinkers. And if you really go in there and you look in detail at all this junk that I put together, And you think about all the processes that are occurring. Heat rises, cold air falls, motion, static electricity, different materials rubbing against each other, galvanic action for two separate metals, solar power, radio wave technology using germanium diodes, capacitor technology, both AC and DC, earth battery technology, capacitor batteries, a regular car battery is a capacitor. Without no electrolyte in the center, it still has a dielectric in between it. You could have a stone cold dry bone, dry to bone battery, has no electrolyte in it whatsoever. It has a dielectric of atmosphere in between there, and it still has positive and negative plates, therefore it's a capacitor. So you can store static electricity in a dead car battery, whereas you can't use it like you normally would have used it as a electrolytic battery. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And so I showed this to the world in a video series called Free Thinkers, and a couple people got a few ideas out of the deal, but they didn't see the overall picture. That thing to this very day is still lit up. Go look at the doggone first video. Go down to the description, see the date that that video was uploaded, and you will see that this thing has ran all that time, all the way up to the present time. And I'm not putting any energy into it. I'm not doing nothing to it. All I have is a solar panel that puts juice to it. I got wind power that puts juice to it. I got earth battery technology that puts juice to it. I got germanium diodes and radio antennas that put juice to it. I got both AC and DC capacitors, plus I'm running it all off of dead batteries. I've got negative ion generator technology in there. I got static electricity technology in there. And I'm still adding little gizmos to it all the time, and this thing is still producing energy and is still doing exactly what it was meant to do. And you can walk by with a radio transmitter, and every time that thing pulses, you can hear it on the AM radio band. Now, anybody out there want to tell Shaziz that there ain't no such thing as free energy? I want to tell you, if you're telling me that, then you ain't paying attention.
You know, I'm surprised, Suzanne, that your rib muscles don't hurt you all the time for laughing at these idiots.
Yeah. But, I mean, but there's
every time you say that, about talk about anybody that doesn't believe in free energy, I mean, everybody on the show, Jermaine, me, we both laugh. We snicker at these idiots.
Well, it's like this,
there,
man.
There is no such thing as energy that is not free. It is the machine that you need to build to utilize that energy. That's what costs money.
See, here's the thing, folks. The next thing coming out of their mouth would be, well, Shaziz, can I run my house on that? No. Your house wasn't designed to run on it. But the concepts that this thing is doing, you could engineer your house to do the same exact thing and turn your house into a literal power plant.
Yes.
If you took two dear similar types of metals and you made your siding out of it, then now you would literally have a thermoelectric generator for your house. Your roofing
yes.
produces a massive amount of heat that you could use to run Stirling engines. You could put little Stirling engines all over the top of your house that would go from the heat and make a deal. You could heat your water with the roof. You could put solar technology in your windows, and now they're getting clear see-through solar panels on the market. Now you'd be able to have a window that is producing electricity. You can use every action that kids, you know, mom's always saying, stop plugging the door, you're letting the heat out, or stop plugging the door, you're letting the cool air out. We'll put a generator on that door, so let the kids run in and out of that door all day long. And when Granny's rocking in her chair, you got Peltier elements producing yet more electricity. You got pressure devices under the cushions of your seat, so when the kids are jumping up and down on the couch, they're charging your batteries up. Every time you open the refrigerator door and shut the refrigerator door, there used to be this little toy that it looked like a book, and it said shocking stories. And you open this book up, and it shocks the living crud out of you because the cover's made out of aluminum, and it has this little twang device. When you open it up, it twangs it back and forth and produces a current and shocks the living crud out of you. No batteries necessary. You know what I'm talking about, Jermaine?
Why don't they have built-in Stirling engines in the fridge's door?
Yeah.
Why?
There's so many possibilities. It's ludicrous. I mean, every time you flush your toilet, at least a gallon of water goes flowing down your toilet. There's a turbine down there that is catching that water pressure as it goes by. You can actually use that water pressure to produce air pressure and charge up air tanks full of air pressure from the doggone deal. So every action at your house could be made into producing some sort of energy that could literally charge your batteries up that you'd then in turn run your inverters off of that you would run your house off of. And, you know, in my mind, it's so ludicrously simple, but what do, man? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. Is that the saying?
Yep.
Well,
you put out all this information, all this good information, and it seems, I don't know if there's anybody that's actually doing anything with it, but it seems as if nobody is taking it to heart. We get a lot of comments about people saying, oh, that's a great idea, and this, that, and other, but I don't see anybody making a video showing that they're actually doing what we're talking about.
Well, on a good note, there are industries out there that listen to what we say, and there are industries that are implementing technologies, and they're making money with nifty little gizmos using things that we've talked about throughout the years that we've been doing the Mad Science Show. So the people out there listening that are making money off of it, but the people who are saying that they're tired of paying their electric bill aren't paying attention.
That's right.
There you go. You know, this drives me insane. I don't call it mad science for nothing. If we really seriously want to resolve the issues of the world, we have every bit of information necessary to do so. That's all we need. We just need people to implement these deals. You know, there's tons of different types of materials that you have access to. There's an unlimited amount of knowledge that you have access to. And we keep posting these links. People like Stephen Gibbons and Mike in the chat room there, they post links, they post comments in there. Check those comments out. You know, put this podcast up to, you know, gather a group of people together for an alternative energy deal. Copy this podcast and sit around for the time of the show, 3 hours? Listen, 3 hour podcast, and pause it here and there and talk about things, and you'd be surprised at what other ideas will come up out of that. And when that happens, then people start engineering stuff. And there's so many possibilities of things that we could do using just the motions that you generate in your house. The zero waste project means that your house produces zero waste. Yeah, everything's reused. It's all energy. No matter what you think it is as far as trash, there's a chemical inside there. There's chemistry going on. And earlier, Stephen Gibbons posted a link in there about conductive Play-Doh. You could mix Play-Doh, two different types of, you know, one Play-Doh has salt in it and the other Play-Doh might have a different chemical in there, two different materials, and now you got a Play-Doh battery. So even what would have normally been a toy now could be a power source. Back in the old days, they used to take a nickel and a penny and shove it down inside of a lemon and make a chemical battery. How many lemons or how many potatoes or how many fruit, what's they call it, a grapefruit, would it take to light up a light bulb? Who knows?
Potato, watermelon, everything.
Yeah. But the basic science is there.
Yeah. A human.
Yeah.
I used to label.
get on the treadmill, charge up your batteries. Get in the rocking chair, charge up your batteries. Open and close the doors, charge up your batteries.
Hook up a little generator to your hamster wheel. Run.
Take the heat off the roof, boil water into steam, send that steam into a expansion chamber, and use that expansion of that steam, which would turn into a cooling effect, to run your air conditioning for your house. Come on, folks. If you compress a gas, which is steam, you compress a gas, it gets hot, and when you allow it to expand rapidly, it gets cold. It's amazing how nature works. Cold is what you want in your house if you want to be cool. Hot's what you want in your house if you want to be hot. It's simple. You could perfectly engineer a house to where your roof was your air conditioner, where your siding was your electricity, where all the wind and all the things that nature throws at you every single day now becomes a power source. You could have a completely and utterly self-contained home that would take everything, including rainwater and snow, and focus it down into storage tanks that could then in turn be filtered, used as fuel, or drinking water, or to even flush your commode, for Pete's sake.
You know, human feces is really great for making methane gas. What's left over is great fertilizer. Human urine is very strong in ammonia, which is fertilizer for plants. I mean, this is something people throw away all the time. I think I mentioned this on another program once or twice, I'm not sure, but the city of New York many years ago spent millions of dollars to build a methane gas generating plant using city sewage.
Alright, hold on, back up a second. Earlier you were talking about using ammonia for air conditioning.
Yes.
So, as nasty as it sounds, you turn the whiz into air conditioning.
Exactly. You can do it very easily. You wouldn't use it pure.
No,
Get the ammonia off of it, which would be very easy because ammonia has a very low boiling point. Very low.
Even
put it through a cooling coil and get pure ammonia.
But even that.
And actually, the refrigeration units that use ammonia, they use ammonia and water.
The rest of what's not used.
Human urine for a refrigerator in a ammonia water refrigerator.
The rest of what's not used once you get the ammonia off of there would be another source of energy.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Piss your way to Mars. With hydrogen technology.
I tell you what, as funny as it might sound, using human urine, do you know that you can go to the fertilizer department in the Home Depot and buy dried urine? It's called urea. And it's in the fertilizer section.
So there you go, man.
Think about that a minute.
Everything, even including your body, nothing gets wasted. No waste fluids get wasted. No heat gets wasted. You could turn your body, which is 98.6 degrees, into a thermal generator that whenever you're out there in the wintertime, you could use your body heat to keep you cool, or summertime, keep you cool, wintertime, keep you warm. You could recycle the heat from your body to literally cause your body to get hotter, because have you ever been under a wool blanket before?
Oh, yeah.
You'll break out in a sweat. Even in wintertime, if you got a wool blanket on top of you, you got to take that blanket off and cool down for a bit. So a lot of times you'll get a crummy night's sleep because you're starting to sweat underneath there. You got to get out from underneath it, and then you cool down. Now you're too cold. You got to get back underneath it.
But there's a way to beat that, Shazam.
Yeah.
You just stick out from under the cover. That way, as the blood goes through your leg, it cools off and comes back in and cools your body.
Well, there you go. See, there's a solution for everything, man.
Exactly. Life gives you lemons, make lemonade.
basically, folks, when the world is willing to listen to folks like us, when the world is willing to bring the most brilliant mind to the table, we will resolve every single problem under the sun, and we will do it in short order. I can't force people to come here to listen to Mad Science. I can't force them to try to utilize some of the ideas that we put out there on the table. But what I can do is keep on putting podcast after podcast after podcast after podcast up there on ShazoozRadio.com. And if you find something there that you like, or you scroll back through the chat room and you find information that you needed, or come and ask one of us about a prior show or ideas for stuff, we've heard enough research and talked to enough people that we can show you where to go to find what you need. And the links that we post here, if you have ideas and links and things that you need to people to check out, then, you know, that's how it happens. This is your network. It's your microphone. Step up to it. Say what you got to say. Help us make the world a better place, one positive pebble at a time. That's what the Mad Science Show is about. That's what the Knights of the Round Table, which is tomorrow, same time, same channel.
Same place.
Same place. Hope you join us and become one of the Honorable Knights of the Round Table, or just an honorary Knight of the Round Table. Just show up. Tell a friend, bring them here. That's what we're doing. We're going to show you how to resolve all the so-called energy problems of the world. We can solve the starvation issues. We can solve the sickness issues, because there's people out there that there's a doctor that wrote a book, and I suggest you look it up, that says diseases don't just happen, in which this book she breaks down exactly what is going on in the chemistry of the body that causes certain diseases to happen. And once you've got an understanding of what's making you sick, you know how not to be sick. You know, if you pay attention to the right people who can tell you about different types of herbs and ways that you can boost your immune system and so on and so forth. We don't sell them products here, but we'll talk about them because they're beneficial to you. So, with that said,
the thing is, when you say we, you're not talking about we, like you, me, Jermaine, Scotty. We're talking about we, all the people out there. We have the technology. We just need to put it all together. We is all of us, all of the listeners out there. Please get other people that would be interested in this program to listen. So eventually we find somebody that will start the movement.
Let us show you how to design your tiny house so that it pays for itself. Literally.
Yes.
And so with that said, you've been listening to the Mad Science. I hope you all join us for the Knights of the Round Table. I see Patty Walking Turtle, that wonderful, beautiful lady in the chat room. And I want to hopefully get to see her if she wakes up in time on the Knights of the Round Table, because she's awesome. So anyway, bring a friend. If you like what you heard here, please share it on your social media networks. You help us by helping you by passing information around, because this is an information channel and we talk about all kinds of things. And I call it Mad Science because it makes me mad, because Jermaine sees it, Raymond sees it, people in the chat room see it, other people see it, and it's all there, all the answers, all the solutions to fix the world. And we still got people saying, save the trees with a wooden stick and a paper sign. Wake up, people. You've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love. Take care. Do-do-do-do-do-do.
Sonic, you hear me? Give my creation life!
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.